From WIPR, I'm Sheila Cast. We're on the record. Baltimore Public Schools will need to cut spending or find new revenues to close a shortfall of $129 million in the budget shaping up for next year. CEO Sonia Santelisa said last week the shortfall is driven by the costs of upgrading school buildings, by higher teacher pay and benefits, and by pupils leaving the system. Baltimore schools have closed budget gaps before, although this one looms especially large.
The biggest tragedy to me in all of this is that it's a diversion from the work of improving instruction in the classrooms.
Kalman Buzzy Hedelman and David Stone, both former members of the city school board, tell us how they'd approach this size shortfall and what the likely impact will be. It's on the record after the news.
You're listening to On the Record, the podcast, a service of your public radio, 88.1 WYPR. Find more podcasts online at wypr.org. And tell us what you think. Send an email to ontherecord@wypr.org.
Good morning, I'm Sheila Cast. We're On the Record. Baltimore City School CEO Sonia Santelisa said last week that the school system faces a $129 million shortfall in the next fiscal year's budget. That's about 10% of the total budget. The Baltimore Sun reported this gap is twice as large as the one the school system closed last year. Santelisa became CEO of City Schools in July after the school board and former CEO Gregory Thornton parted ways just halfway through his four-year contract. Previously, Santelisa served under then-CEO Andres Alonso as chief academic officer from 2010 to 2013. The Sun said Santelisa's pointed to several factors contributing to the shortfall. Three big ones are costs related to a major renovation of school buildings, the teachers' union contract, and a decline in enrollment of more than 900 students. Joining me to discuss how the school board might approach a budget deficit of this size are two former city school board members, people we figure know the history and the issues but are not responsible for the current picture. David Stone left the board before the most recent superintendent search, but he was part of the board that hired Gregory Thornton. Stone's two stints on the board spanned the tenures of five school CEOs. David Stone is now Assistant Vice President of Operations at Kennedy Krieger Institute. Welcome to the show.
Thank you.
Also with us is Kalman Buzzy Hedelman, former Maryland Human Resources Secretary and a former city school board member. He served on the school board twice, actually, from 1971 to 74, and then again in the early 2000s. Buzzy Hedelman is a policy analyst and advocate for public schools with a focus on special education. Welcome.
Thank you.
$129 million is a staggering amount. Should parents in Baltimore City be panicking?
No. First of all, it's a shortfall. It's important to note that it's a shortfall, not a deficit. The school system has not overspent in this year's budget or last year's budget, and this is projected. And there is almost an annual shortfall that ranges from, let's say, $30 million to 2 years ago. I think it was $100 million. So most of it stems from a revenue shortage and a shrinking in state aid. Still, the money is important, and services will bear some of the burden of the cuts. The city cannot afford those cuts, and yet the classroom has by and large been spared, and the work goes on. And still, even with the revenue shortages, the school system can and must do better with classroom instruction and improving the academic outcomes of the kids.
I want to make sure I understand everything you said. At one point you said services will bear some of the shortfall. What exactly do you mean by that?
Well, support services for teachers in the classroom. It's very important. For example, principals and teachers on the front lines need assistance from central staff. They need training. They need supervision. They need all kinds of support. And I think in the final analysis, too, that there will be some slight cuts in what goes into the classroom.
David Stone, what's your reaction to this $129 million news?
It's a large amount. I have been on the board when we have had similar amounts, and as Buzzy said, it's a projected shortfall. It's not a current shortfall. I know that the board has a 5-year strategic plan, and certainly this is going to impact their ability to do some of those components of the plan, because each part of it does require money. But I'm not sure that this is a huge surprise. I think we made some investments early on that were costly and, although exciting at the time, have helped lead us to where we are today.
Right, and I want to get to those, but I want to pick up on both of you seem to be saying, be calm, don't worry. This happens almost every year, something maybe smaller, but something like this. I got the impression from the way CEO Santelices was quoted in The Sun that she was saying, I don't want to be doing this every year. I want to fix this. Why are we? Let me ask you that. Why do we every year hear of some multi-million dollar shortfall in the Baltimore schools budget?
I think one reason is because we make the budget before we know how much revenue we're going to get. That's one way I would think.
That's because the state budget is passed usually the first week in April, and the school system budgeting process begins in November, December. You have to project class sizes, enrollments, and so forth. But I think the biggest structural problem is the revenue shortage. I'm a member of the Kerwin Commission to bring up to date the Thornton funding and so forth.
Thornton is the shorthand,
the name for the state, yes, the Bridge to Excellence Act. That was enacted in 2002 based on the recommendations of a commission known as the Thornton Commission.
And it is essentially the state's formula for funding local education.
Yes. And now there is the Kerwin Commission, titled formally the Commission on Innovation and Excellence in Education, that is chaired by Britt Kerwin. And the city is now getting $200 million less a year in revenue from the state than was projected when Thornton was passed in 2002. And actually, as recently as 2008, the city was getting more or less 100% of what was projected under Thornton. But since 2008, state aid has plummeted at the same time as federal aid has plummeted.
I don't have those numbers before me, and I wouldn't have the nerve to debate you even if I did, but I did read that 72% of the city schools budget comes from the state. You're saying, I might think that's a big percentage, but it's not as big as it should be?
Not nearly as big as it should be. A, again, because the state hasn't funded what it was supposed to fund, and that $200 million a year is a lot of money. And the other thing is everyone agrees that the Thornton formulas are now outdated and too low, and that's why the Kerwin Commission has been convened to bring that up to date. And you may have seen where the consultant's report to the commission calls for an additional $2.6 billion in spending, a huge amount of money. The state isn't going to tackle it head on, but it sets a baseline for gradual additions in state aid, which are absolutely essential to the city.
That is schools advocate, former city school board member Buzzy Hettleman here on The Record on WIPR. I'm Sheila Cast. Also with me is former school board member David Stone. We're talking about the shortfall facing Baltimore City Schools budget. David Stone, what are your thoughts about whether the state is putting enough money into Baltimore City Schools?
I guess what's important is to look. We had a huge infusion of money when the first Thornton Commission was completed and the Bridge to Excellence Act came out.
And that was in the
2002 or 2003. And I guess it would be important for me to look at what types of gains we made with those dollars. That was a lot of money. And included in that amount of money was a lot of money from the federal government during the stimulus time. And I just wonder how that money was spent in a way that made an impact on students that was, worth looking at more money. I think that a lot of people think that throwing money at the problem can solve it. I'm not sure that I 100% agree, or if I agree that that money is best spent in the school system. There are many other services that are underfunded that could really support our students and make it easier for the school system to do its job.
Give me an example of what you mean and how it might actually end up with a reduced pressure on the school system.
Mental health, for example, is an area that the school system heavily invests in, I think. And it's not necessarily the business of schools to be in the mental health field, certainly as it impacts instruction. But beyond that, there are whole agencies in the state that are dedicated to the mental health of children. And without their help, the school system is going to have a very difficult time being successful. And that's true of housing. That's true of any of those services that allow a student to help prioritize education in their life. For kids who have the things that they need outside of school, they can make education a priority. For those kids that don't, it's much more difficult.
So the current commission on which you serve will report to the General Assembly after it convenes its 2017 session.
Our report is due December of 2017. We won't get into kind of deep work until after the legislative session, but we did get last month the final report of the consultants who have been at work for 2 years.
The report of the consultants. So this coming session of the General Assembly will not be revising the formula. That won't happen for at least another year.
Yes.
Which means right now the Baltimore schools are facing a shortfall, and while Delegate Maggie McIntosh and other delegates who represent the city are expressing solidarity and saying they'd like to help, the state is facing budget pressures also. Realistically, what do you expect from the state to address this shortfall?
Hopefully, we'll get a little bit out of the General Assembly this year, notwithstanding all the fiscal conditions of the state. We have good advocates down there. The leadership of the Senate and House have been relatively responsive, but it will not cut deeply at all into the structural deficit.
If you were still on the school board, what changes would you suggest that the city schools make, if any?
I think a couple of things, none of which are in any way panaceas for the deep structural shortage of money. But I chaired the budget committee of the school system, and I can show you the scars on my back from that experience.
And that was about when that you did that?
That was about 2006 to 2008. And I think that there is a gap between the complexity of the city budget and the management capacity to budget and account for that money as efficiently as we would like. The budget is about $1.4 billion, and it's not a straight budget. There are hundreds and hundreds of funding sources. Often they come at us in different times, in unpredictable here and theres, and that requires an enormous capacity for just management. And that's one level, and I don't think there is a good match between that complexity and our in-house management capacity. It is interesting and telling that Dr. Sanalesis, to her credit, went to an outside consulting firm, ERS, I forget what it stands for, to do the high-level analytics that led to her impressive delineation of the problem. Well, I think the next step needs to be taken, which is to get some outside study, review, audit that goes line by line and looks for places where there are efficiencies to be realized. It's interesting because privatization is such a hot item these days, and for better or worse, in education circles. Maybe the school system should privatize the budget and accounting operation, meaning contract it out under the full control of the school board and the CEO, but it will give the kind of capacity that does not exist now.
We need to take a quick break, but before we do that, David Stone, I can't read your face. I can't tell whether you're agreeing with Buzzy Hettleman's analysis of what's needed right now or what you would suggest the city schools should do right now.
Well, I will say that ERS, the consultants, have been giving us advice for at least as long as I've been on the school board, since 2002. So I'm not clear about what new advice they have for us now. They've done a lot of analysis of the expenses in the school system, and yet we still find ourselves in the place that we are. So we'll see what information we can get from them.
Okay, on that note, we're going to take a real quick break here. When On the Record is back, we'll go a little more deeply into the factors in the big shortfall facing Baltimore City schools. I'm Sheila Cast. Stay with us.
Thank you.
This is the On the Record podcast, a service of Your Public Radio, member-supported 88.1 WYPR. You can support this podcast and everything you hear from WYPR. Become a member. Come to WYPR.org and click the donate link.
Welcome back to On the Record. I'm Sheila Cass. Today we're looking at the shortfall facing Baltimore City Public Schools, about 10% of its budget of $1.2 billion not in place. When CEO Sonia Santelices made the deficit public last week, she said she was not, at least not yet, proposing budget cuts or layoffs. She was looking for ideas about how to address the shortfall. In that spirit, we have asked two former members of the city school board what they think are significant factors. David Stone and Kalman Buzzy Hedelman are here with me in the studio. One of the points that Dr. Santelices made in explaining the big factors in the deficit was the school renovation program, mm-hmm. and probably a function of the fact that I don't pay attention to the school spending as a regular thing. I thought that was kind of all settled and wrapped up with a bow when the state, 2 years ago, appropriated a great deal of money for a construction budget for the city to renovate its schools. Why is that a problem factor in the school's current budget?
I can tell you that one of the reasons is because there are operating expenses that are included. The way the school system works, for large-scale construction projects, we have a capital budget, mm-hmm. and for the running of the school system, we have an operating budget. Mm-hmm. In this case, there is $30 million that will be coming out of the operating budget to help support the building of those schools. And in addition to that, the school system is required to raise maintenance $3 million a year over the next several years. So it's not just a $3 million increase, it's $3 million upon $3 million upon $3 million.
Those were conditions that the state imposed in order to get the capital money.
In simplest terms, there is an ongoing impact on the operating budget of the city schools to get these buildings renovated. And is anybody looking at saying, well, maybe we have to then do less than we thought we were going to do? Is that part of the discussion now?
Not that I know
not
of.
That I, know
of
either.
I mean, that's an option, but it's very hard. That construction program is well underway. Mm-hmm. And if you start messing with that schedule, it's a very risky thing.
I can tell you the school system might want to rethink phase two until revenues sort of straighten out. It was always intended to be a phase one of this project and a phase two, because the money that it will not be sufficient to rebuild all the schools that need to be either rebuilt or renovated. But I think it would be worth the school system's time to look at whether or not using that large amount of operating funds to build buildings is really the best use of money, especially when our classrooms need plenty of money in them for instruction.
It's the kind of terrible Hobson's choice that the school system always has to pick its poison in terms of money. The $30 million could be better spent in the near term in the classroom. On the other hand, it has enormous spinoff in funds from the state that get up to what the program is, $1 billion. And so it's a relatively small investment. It's just that the city really can't afford not to do it, and it can't afford to do it. So welcome to the Baltimore City school system.
But one of the things that Dr. Santelices mentioned that I think is definitely on the right track is to accelerate the closing of schools. There's many more desks in the school system than students. And in addition, we have several small schools which are subsidized well beyond the amount that the school system gives them because their model wouldn't work on a per pupil funding alone.
But what a terribly painful process that is.
It is.
For city neighborhoods, we all want neighborhoods to be better for the kids. And when you close a school, you close one of the few anchors in the community of low-income neighborhoods.
This is On the Record on WYPR. I'm Sheila Cast speaking with former school board members Buzzy Hedelman and David Stone. We're talking about the shortfall in the Baltimore City Schools budget. What is the connection between that you were just discussing, the power and appeal of up-to-date school buildings, and the declining enrollment that we seem to see year after year? The city schools structure seems to be surprised that not as many students have shown up in the classroom as they were counting on.
The enrollment stabilized for a couple of years, and I don't think they were all phantom enrollments, which were an issue a couple years ago. The stronger the schools are, the more families that can afford to move or send their children to private school or parochial school, you know, will send their kids to the city schools if the schools are good enough, which partially gets you into the issue of the charter schools and the adequacy of their funding, which is one of the question marks in the city budget. The other big question mark as you look forward to setting priorities is the teacher's contract and pay. And again, one hopes and thinks, you know, no reason not to think that Dr. Sanalesis and the board will not try to strike the right balance on those. But either way, there's going to be some pain involved in that process too. And again, you know, what would you do as a board member? Hopefully you'd be able to support the CEO's priorities. And hopefully, notwithstanding all these pressures, one finds a way to get to the classroom and strengthen or at least maintain classroom instruction. The biggest tragedy to me in all of this is that it's a diversion from the work of improving instruction in the classrooms. Dr. Sanalesis is, as far as I know, the best person in the country to head any school system with respect to classroom instruction. She knows it as cold as anybody does. She loves it. It's her passion. And it's hard for her to get around to it because so much time and effort of staff at all levels will now be drawn into the budget issues and other kinds of issues that slow down attention on the classroom.
Buzzy Hittleman just put a whole lot of things on the table, and David Stone, we need to wrap up soon, so I want to get your thoughts. Teacher's contract.
Mm-hmm.
I think just the week before Dr. Sanalesis announced this shortfall, teachers were demonstrating in front of the school board for improvements in the contract. It doesn't sound as if they're starting this journey close together on what monetary benefits teachers ought to be getting. How do you see that working out?
Well, you know, the teacher contract conceptually is a great idea. Teachers do deserve a career ladder, and they should be able to advance in their profession. And if they demonstrate success in their field, they should be rewarded. On the other hand, how we figure out who those teachers are is something that is worth some review. There are a lot of teachers that, for example, are in the model teacher program, and ensuring that we continue to gauge whether or not they are qualified to be in that program is a really important piece that I don't think we've completely gotten on top of. And then, of course, there's the non-monetary benefits of things like health insurance, where, for example, prescription costs in the school system have skyrocketed over the last 4 years. It's very important to teachers and their families that those insurance benefits remain as intact as possible.
And what about declining enrollment? How do you see addressing that?
Well, declining enrollment, I think we were a bit short-sighted. Back when there was the financial crisis of about 2007-08, families didn't have the same options that they have now as things have recovered. So we were keeping a lot of families in the school system that could not take advantage of some of the other choices that they might have had.
I'm not sure I'm following the implications of what you're
saying. What I'm saying is that people have more options now than they did in 2008. So when we had more students in the school system, in my opinion, it was a function of them having no other choice.
Then?
Yes. And now they do have choices. And I'd be curious to see who exactly is leaving the school system. I've heard everything from quote-unquote middle-class families that are leaving the school system, and I've heard that families who are struggling financially are also leaving the school system. So it would be great to know who's leaving, because I think that that would help with the remedy.
Interesting. Quickly, before I let you go, throughout this whole process, what should the school board be doing to keep families informed?
Well, it's primarily the job of the CEOs, just like all operational details are. The job of the school board is mainly to hire and fire CEOs as necessary and to provide oversight and support. But the big job belongs to the CEO, and I think this school board is very understanding of that and supportive of that role, and I think they're doing everything they can with Dr. Sanalesis to inform the community. And the presentations that Dr. Sanalesis made last week are very impressive and unprecedented at this stage in the process.
I agree. Getting out in front of it like this, and especially way ahead of the legislative session, I think Dr. Sanalesis and the board have done a good job of letting folks know exactly what the situation is right now. so that solutions don't have to be at the 11th hour. They can be a little more thoughtful.
Thank you so much for this conversation.
I appreciate it. Thank you.
Thank you.
Thank you.
David Stone and Kalman Buzzy Hedelman are both former city school board members. Buzzy Hedelman is a policy analyst and advocate for public schools with an emphasis on special education. David Stone is assistant vice president of operations at the Kennedy Krieger Institute. This is On the Record. I'm Sheila Cast. Thanks for joining us today. Hope you'll be back with us again tomorrow.